Today I'll be talking about the control environmental facilities for plant process quantification and modeling aspects. This is the control environmental facilities that I'm going to be that are being used for this purpose is similar to the facilities that was presented by Dr. Ken Booty, and the facilities at Mississippi State were the first one to build for keeping modeling as the main objectives. What we have is sunlit plant growth chambers. There we have 10 of them at our place, and they are sunlit, as I said, and the main thing is sunlit, and then they have a 1 meter soil bin. It's about 1 meter deep soil bin. That is pretty unique compared to many other indoor plant growth chambers. And also the chambers are pretty large, about 2.5 meters tall, 1.5 meters wide, and it has 1 meter growing area. And this front face of the soil bin is covered with a glass plate, so that you can even monitor root growth like a mini rhizotron. And then there is a continuous the fan that circulates air continuously go up in the canopy and goes down and continuously circulates at the rate of almost similar to the air movement in the outside field condition. As you can see, there are shades that are put around the plant canopy that mimic the border plants, so that we can look at the canopy level processes. What can we control in those chambers? We have about 50 ton cooling capacity for those 10 chambers, so that we can go as low as 410 degrees centigrade to as high as 45 degrees temperatures. For high temperature, for heating control, we have 5.5 kilowatt heaters, 2.5 kilowatt heaters on either side of the spot chamber, for each chamber. And CO2, we can go a little bit of sub-ambient to almost close to 950 ppm CO2 levels. We can as well control UV radiation from 0 to several levels of up to 16 kilojoules of UV light. And also water regimes can be easily manipulated based on measured ET values. And also fertilization, one or several nutrients can be easily manipulated along, either alone or in combination. All these we can control either in alone or in combination of any of these factors. That is the pretty unique capacity for doing the control environmental facility. What we can measure, most of the abiotic conditions like air and canopy and dew point temperatures, solar and ultraviolet radiation, chamber CO2 and outside concentration, soil, water and temperature by depth, relative humidity. We can also measure canopy level processes, particularly photosynthesis, respiration and evapotranspiration. We can as well use many of these leaf level gadgets that can monitor leaf level physiological processes and also biochemical processes. You can collect the leaves. But we also can measure, these are the much more designed, many of these are designed to generate the response functions for developing the models. Growth and developmental processes. We can look at the phenological rates, similar events like leaf addition or phyllocron or clastocron rates, leaf area duration, how long it's going to expand the leaf, dissimilar events like seed to emergence, emergence to flower bud formation, flower bud to flower, flower bud to open fruit or seed, depending upon the crop, growth rates, leaf, internode, stem, root, fruiting structures. We can also measure, as the previous speaker already described fairly in detail about the measuring carbon balance using the control systems at the whole plant level. Here the spot, if this is the spot chamber, we draw CO2 from using the suction pump into the adjacent building and goes through a drying agents where the moisture will be taken out, and then it will go to a CO2 analyzer and it goes back to this spot chamber. This is the closed loop. Continuously air will be, at every 10 seconds, the computer will sense what's the CO2 concentration in the that is incoming stream, and then make a decision whether to add CO2 to maintain a steady concentration. If the CO2 is depleted, taken by the plant, and then we open the valves and then send it to that one. These decisions are made at a 10-second interval in our system. Similarly, all the air temperature and other controls are also based on the 10-second reading from each of those individual chambers. Here is an example of canopy level carbon exchange rate on a diurnal CO2. This is the light level, this is the plant's government ambient level, and twice ambient, almost 760 CO2 level when the canopy was fully closed, at a full canopy closure. Here is from those lighter diurnal trends, we can calculate the canopy level photosynthetic rates for plants grown at various levels. Here, plants grown at elevated CO2 with well-fertilized plants with the nitrogen. Here is the plants grown at elevated CO2 with lower nitrogen deficient and ambient and nitrogen deficient. From these response functions, we can go and look at a given light level, calculate the canopy level photosynthesis, and we can look at the seasonal trends, what is happening to the seasonal trends in canopy photosynthesis, and try to understand the canopy photosynthetic and growth rate for the whole growing season. From this, we can actually look at the canopy level photosynthesis as a function of leaf nitrogen and quantify nitrogen photosynthetic response to leaf nitrogen concentrations. Similarly, you can look at the canopy level conductance values calculated from those, look at the seasonal trends, how the environmental conditions affect those seasonal canopy level conductance, and also modify or you can estimate the quantify the responses. Similar to the trends in canopy level light utilization efficiencies as a function of season, as a function of a given variable. Similarly, we can also look at the canopy level transpiration or evapotranspiration. Here, if we look at the transpiration at the ambient CO2 compared to the transpiration at the elevated CO2 at the leaf level, we can get plants grown at elevated CO2 are transferring much less than the at ambient CO2. But when we look at the, particularly for C3 cotton, we look at canopy level evapotranspiration, they were not much different. The reason for that one is each species will behave differently to elevated CO2. When we look at the leaf area development, there is about 26% increase in leaf area at elevated CO2. That compensated the effect at the leaf level. So we almost get no response to elevated CO2 when we looked at the whole canopy. As I said earlier, these sparm control facilities, particularly this spar chamber that has a sunlit conditions, are designed to look at the growth and developmental rates of crops and try to understand how this process is. They are not just designed to look at the yield responses because of the smaller area. Yields are there, but it is not the primary. The primary objective is to look at the growth and responses and try to answer some of those questions. Here, I'm going to present some of them, like from events. Like most of the work that I did was on cotton, so we look at emergence to flower formation, flower to these major phenological events, and also leaf developmental rates as a function of temperature and in those. Here we are breaking down the crop growth developmental aspects, emergence to flower, first flower formation, this middle curve, flower to square bud to flower formation, this response function, and flower to open fruit. As we can see, those three response major phenological events in cotton, they respond differently to given two temperature conditions. One of them is linear, other ones are not linear. So some certain portion of the temperature is linear, from here to here more or less linear, then the rate of development, it takes more time to reach the stage at a higher temperature. We also looked at can we do it for all the cultivars, or for all the species different, or cultivars different? We do see some differences and some interactions. Particularly, this is we are looking at upland cotton DPL50, which is time emergence to square formation in this temperature here. This one is an early season cotton cultivar. This is a mid season cultivar. This is a Pima cotton. The responses here, this Pima cotton responds to temperature. There is an interaction. So then we have to derive a new function. If there is no interaction, then you can have, if we have one function, then get a multiplier function for the whole temperature response function, get it for another mid season or early season or late season cultivar. Here we are looking at leaf addition rate as a function of temperature. Leaf addition on the main stem, leaf addition on the fruiting branches, they are much different because of the phenological differences in the main stem and also in the branches. Here we are looking at temperature effects on a leaf developmental rate, or the how long from emergence to full mature leaf, how long it's going to take to get one for the internode, one for the leaf. Internodes mature much quicker, elongate and reach mature size much quicker than the leaves. And we can also look at organ growth rates as a function of temperature. Here we are looking at a fruit, which is a ball, and the square responses in here. And we can look at fruit production efficiency as a function of temperature and elevated CO2. In this case, this is almost similar response function that Ken presented. It's similar to the bean plants, which is around 33 degrees, closer to the bean plants. And also we can look at individual processes, how they respond within the crop. Here we are looking at the canopy level photosynthesis in here, in response to midday leaf water potential here, well water on this side, water stressed on this side. Here we are looking at different processes expressed as a fraction of the optimum condition. Here we are leaf area expansion and stem elongation, they go hand in hand, much different than the photosynthetic response. These are some of the quantification that we needed for modeling purpose. Here we are looking at a range of UV radiation levels for different processes. Again, 0 to each, the leaf area response is much, leaf area development is much more responsive to UV radiation compared to photosynthetic responses. Similarly, we have the leaf nitrogen here, different processes within the crop, leaf nitrogen and different processes express well fertilized, less well fertilized. These are really designed to do, here the data points I'm showing is only for the stem growth responses. It's designed to do, develop response functions. Here again, leaf growth is much more responsive to leaf deprivation of leaf nitrogen than photosynthetic response. Similarly, again, another nutrient, leaf growth is much more responsive than photosynthetic response, which is this one, which is this line, for another nutrient. So the major advantages of sunlit chamber, these controlled environmental chambers that what we have, either here at our place, at Dr. Booty's place, at Beltsville, Maryland, they are sunlit, but other abiotic factors can be controllable very nicely. You can control it very nicely to understand the effects of abiotic factors or biotic factors, even if you have the not too expensive if the objectives are to quantify the processes for modeling. It means the expense you put it on is not too expensive. You cannot get it any other ways. Very well suited for multiple environments alone or in combination, means you can control it several environmental abiotic factors either alone or in combination. Particularly well suited to address the omics questions, genomics or proteomics issues. Most of these recent studies in that area are being done in molecular biology or biochemistry and molecular biology. And if you look at those studies and look at the growth conditions, many of them even do not list the light conditions, first thing. Even if they list, most of them, they are 100 to 300 micromoles. 100 to 300 micromoles. That is, and then they are already light limited conditions. They are carbon starved, and you impose another stress, like temperature stress, water stress, on the top of those things. What you get is not going to be useful for anything. So those under these are some of the issues that we have to address. There are 100 micromoles. You have 10 upregulated, or 30, or genes are downregulated. There are already carbon stress. You are trying to interpret that if we impose a high temperature, there are so many genes are upregulated. So those studies are not going to be that much useful to understand the processes. So we have to be very careful. That's the reason this particular these sunlit chambers are pretty powerful. It's not only sunlit, but also you can use indoor plant growth chambers with higher light levels, so that can be useful. The only thing I say is the space in space limitation means you cannot grow large areas. You cannot address some of those large areas where we can have the yield responses to the stress factors. Yield is a season-long process. We cannot, for those small chambers, we cannot use to address. If it is there, we can address, we can use it to understand the process, but it is a season-long process. These chambers are designed to look at, more or less, look at the growth responses, individual growth processes responses, not designed for yield responses. It is really not advisable to compare yield responses if they have been reported in these chambers to what is observed in the real world, because it's a season-long process. It's a very small area, but it's not the idea. These are designed to address the understand the processes, how the processes are being affected by either single or multiple environmental factors. If you are interested, you can look at that website, spar.msta.edu. You can look at many details, how the chambers are controlled, and many of our publications are available online at that website. That's all I have. If you have any questions, be glad to answer.
Minutes of questions for Dr. Reddy, and then we'll go into some general discussions.
I'm also a little disappointed in the modeling part of your presentation. You maybe showed curve fitting for your data, but I know you group us up on crop modeling as well. How much of these data have actually gone into the development of the crop model for evaluation?
Since I came in 1998 to Mississippi State, I was assigned to develop the functional relationships for cotton. Since then, we provided almost like more than 150 different response functions. Most of them were in 1997 Advances in Agronomy. Almost all functions were incorporated into the Gaussian model. Means I did not provide the functions because there is no point in providing the equations for those things, because almost like 150 different functions for various processes, either phenology or growth responses, are in the current model. And the model being used or tested, I did not bring all that information, because that's not the issue that we are talking about. Most of the growth and developmental responses that what I presented today, just a few of them, several of them are there in the model.
Any other questions? Like Fuji to acquire, a lot of people know the chambers very well. But
yeah.
Okay. Thank you.